I know I probably created this fantasy that I'm just living in that 24 hours a day, but I do actually just go out and cotton sometimes. A bit exhausting to have to constantly try and justify and explain what you do and what you're into and all those sort of things, because I'm like a niche internet micro celebrity who wears weird outfits.
My name is Abby, and I'm the voice behind the Evolving Love Project. In this podcast, my husband and I deep dive into the topics of non-monogamy and polyamory, drawing from our experiences of being consensually non-monogamous for almost a decade.
My name is Liam. Whether you're monogamous, polyamorous, curious, or anything in between, we invite you to join us for this conversation.
Let's begin.
Kyron Kruger is a fetish model and kinkster. He is known widely for his creative work that explores latex fetish wear, and he is seen collaborating with Australia's best photographers and creatives.
In this episode, we talk to Kyron about how he found his way into the world of BDSM, his ability to honour his fetishes alongside his masculinity, assumed compatibilities, the future of the sex industry and AI, the economics of being a creative in the sex industry, and so much more. And with that, we bring you our conversation with Kyron Kruger.
Kyron, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Kyron, would you mind sharing with us how you entered into this world of kink?
It's a bit of a long story.
We're here for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I guess I'd always sort of had those sort of interests growing up through like my teenage years. I always sort of knew I was into some sort of different stuff. So what, like my fantasies and those sort of things. And I grew up in like a really small regional town and was just always felt a little bit different. Never really felt I fit in. I was a bit of a, I guess, a dork in school, and it wasn't really, girls weren't really into me or anything like that. And I was quite awkward. And then, yeah, just didn't really feel like I was really belonged. And I went away to university, sort of had a bit of a fuckboy era, I think, there for a while as well. Like all of a sudden I was getting like attention from the opposite sex and all this sort of stuff, and sort of went crazy with it. But there was always these things that I was sort of a little bit ashamed or scared to share with people, and eventually moved to Melbourne for work and sort of started up like an Instagram, effectively as a bit like a dating profile, just trying to find like-minded people like me. Like I found it quite isolating at times, trying to find people with similar interests and into the things that I like doing. I don't know if you've probably seen my Instagram stuff, I have a particular taste in things and what I like to do. So, and it sort of grew from there, like as I started getting more people following me. And originally it was all sort of facing and very secretive and hid my who I was, and photographers and other creators and stuff started reaching out, and it sort of really snowballed from there and grew and grew. And, you know, I was getting other content creators sort of reaching out to shoot with me. And at that time, I didn't really have any platforms where I could potentially monetize what I was doing. Mm. And I was like, I'm not the fact that I was being exploited, but I was like, I should be making some money from this as well. And at the time, I was sort of working in a corporate environment. So that was sort of my main focus at the time. But I'd always just was really unhappy working in those environments. I couldn't just get my head around working that sort of 9-to-5 grind. It was always really, really draining for me, and I could never stay focused, and it was just wasn't exciting for me. And as this sort of grew, and I'd always sort of been around sex workers and sex worker adjacent, or, you know, dating in that industry, I just thought, you know what, fuck it, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm sick of trying to be someone I'm not, and just went full into it, and this is where I'm at now.
So for those who haven't seen your Instagram, you mentioned your particular interests.
Yeah.
Can you walk us through some of these? I'm sure they're plentiful.
But so my Instagram is, I recently just rebranded actually. It's King_Kruger_ because someone took just King Kruger. So I had to have the little extra rude King and little underscore at the end. Yeah. So my main thing is sort of latex fetish and kink and sort of those BDSM elements. But I guess I try and make it a little bit different. About stylizing and how I present myself, and I guess play around with femininity and masculinity and how I present myself, and sort of, I guess, want to make it possible and make people see that you can sort of play with those things and still be quite comfortable in your masculinity and who you are, and whether you're a man, woman, they, them, or whatever you're sort of working with at the time, it's okay, and you can express those things freely without having to, I guess, sacrifice your masculinity or whatever you're trying to do with your life at that particular time. So yeah, that's where it all come from, and So by no means a finished product, but this is where I am now. Yeah.
Yeah. Your Instagram is absolutely incredible. I can't remember exactly when I started following it, but I remember just like, I think seeing one of those one of the first photos that I saw of you was one of those outfits where you were really engaging with more of an effeminate outfit. And it is so striking because you are 6'6". You're so traditionally like masculine and handsome in your appearance, yeah. Like the sheer strength of who you are. You know, you're a big man, and to see you engaging with that other aspect of yourself just completely blew me away. And I know it completely blew Liam away as well. We're like, who is this superstar?
Yeah. I mean, it's really striking. Like, so when you mentioned growing up in a small town, was there anyone that you could confide in? Like, were you able to be like, hey mate, guess what?
No, no way. No. Very like conservative sort of heteronormative sort of environment. Absolutely not, unfortunately. Okay. So yeah, I guess that maybe why I was a little bit of an outcast. I never really felt like I fit into those sort of norms. But so I guess moving away was like a big motivator as well. Like, I always knew that I was not really going to find happiness where I was, or find the people that were like me where I was. So it was a big motivator for me to leave. And I did. And I'm glad I did, even though I've got a university degree right now that's completely useless. I'm glad I did it because it sort of pulled me out of that bubble and got me out in the world and meeting other people. And because I think I was quite like a neurotic and anxious kid as well, so quite shy, and still have some like anxiety issues and stuff like that. But yeah, I was very neurotic and sort of reserved and quiet, and that sort of pulled me out and made me, I guess, grow up a little bit as well. That was a really big part of it also.
Do you remember the first time you connected with someone and shared like, hey, I'm into this? Because it would have been such a liberating thing, especially coming from like a background where it's like you feel that you have this identity that you can't really fully embrace.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say. Even with a lot of my relationships through my 20s, I hid a lot of this about me. I didn't tell a lot of my girlfriends at the time that I was into this sort of stuff, really worried that it would like freak them the fuck out. And in some situations it did, which, you know, that's a risk you take, I guess. But I guess I was probably dating people that weren't going to align with those sort of things anyway. For a lot of times, I think I was overcompensating with the people I was dating because I was sort of the ugly duckling in school. I was trying to prove that I can, you know, have the pretty girlfriend or whatever it was at the time, which is so shallow to look back at now. But at the time I was really just trying to prove, I don't know who wrong, but that's what I was doing. And then I guess when I moved to Melbourne, that was when I really thought I tried to sort of throw myself into the kink scene in that community and try and find like-minded people. So I can't really think of like an exact moment when that person I first spoke to, but I think it was all just like little baby steps, maybe just hints or hinting at these sort of things and just seeing how they felt about certain things to try and vibe where they were at with it. But yeah, definitely like getting involved in the community and like attending like events and stuff was where you really get to be a bit more free about what you're into and communicating your sort of wants and needs and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine how it would be difficult to bring that conversation up to women that you were dating, you know, girlfriends who didn't know anything about this. I mean, there has been so much stigma around BDSM, and I feel like there are so many misconceptions around it. I know that it was up until recently, it was in the DSM as a mental health.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, that was only...
It was like an illness.
An illness in the DSM until I think it was only like 2009 or something and it's been taken out. But I mean, you know, that just shows how like recent I feel it is that there's so much more awareness around BDSM and, you know, hopefully the sort of the normalizing of it or the destigmatizing of it as it being something, you know... Yeah. Bad or unhealthy.
Absolutely. Like I always like joke that I look like the villain from the 80s like teen movie. So it's like I don't really present myself that you would probably typically think associated with that community, but that's I guess what I'm trying to break down and say that there's no, you don't look like a certain way to be a part of a certain community. Like these things that you like, or you, like, you know, if you're doing it safely, sanely and consensually, then they're totally fine. You don't have to be a certain way, look a certain way or act a certain way to want to partake in this, in this sort of journey, I guess.
Have you had situations where like some people who aren't in the scene who are like friends of yours, like male friends from when you were younger, have like stumbled across these like incredible photos and just been like, what the fuck is going on?
Absolutely. I mean, probably had like negative experiences with that as well.
Okay,
like
yeah.
One of my good friends in school, in primary school, found it and then felt he needed to tell everyone I knew in my town, even including my family, and was also like reaching out to my friends down here to try and expose me, I guess. But they sort of already knew that. And so they're like, just so you know, this guy's like trying to like embarrass you or something. I'm like, ah, look, I, that's his prerogative if he wants to do that. But it was just sort of shocking that how much effort he was putting in to try and.
Did he feel that he was going on this crusade to like save you
something? No, because he didn't speak to me directly. So he's never spoken to me directly about it. But I've just heard from so many other people that he told them. And I was like, okay.
Just gossiping about
you. Yeah, I just, maybe he's not happy with his own situation or whatever it is. But yeah, that was probably one of the other things. Like that happens a bit, like because I still like play sport and stuff and I try and keep it separate from that, but it does come out of, in some stages. And like I'm not ashamed of it, but sometimes I just like can't be bothered sort of justifying my existence or what I'm into to every single person I meet. Like it, sometimes like it's exhausting being an ambassador to every single person.
And it's not everything that you are.
You know,
even though you present online, because that's like a brand as well as the fact of the way you like to creatively express yourself. Like when you're probably turning up to, I don't know what sport you play, but footy, let's just say it's footy. If you're turning up to a footy game, you don't want everyone to be like, oh, that's the guy who loves getting into latex on a Friday night. And, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, yeah, it's like, while I'm not like I'm pretty comfortable who I am, it is sometimes a bit exhausting to have to constantly try and justify and explain what you do and what you're into and all those sort of things because, yeah, it's just tiring.
So have you done a lot of like research into, you know, the psychology behind BDSM or certain fetishes or like have you read a lot of the literature around?
Probably not as much as I should. I mean, yeah, it always interests me and how people find themselves in particular, I guess, scenes or kinks and that sort of stuff and what motivates that and whether it's, and like I think there's always a thing that's like it's always come through trauma, which I just don't think necessarily is always true, which I think that's like a bit of a, you know, moral high ground. Some people try and take that they've gone through some terrible things and now they're into all this weird stuff. Which I just don't think is fair on everyone who's involved. I'm like, obviously, yeah, sometimes that can be a factor and it can be a healthy way to deal with those traumas as well if it's done, like, you know, consensually and safely and communication is really open. It can be a great way to work through those sort of things. But, yeah, I'm not a big reader. I think I think it's like I don't know. I'm not diagnosed, but I'm fairly sure I have some, like, ADHD tendencies. and, like, all my friends who have it, like, dude, like you've got something going on there. I'm like, oh, okay, fair enough. But so I haven't always been a huge reader. Like I always like sort of find learning through discussion. So I love talking to people. So it was like even like this coming on a podcast is quite fun for me because I love just having discussions with people. That's sort of how I've always learned. So yeah, I love to have conversations with people and really dig into stuff. But as far as like literature and actual like academia and that sort of thing, I haven't gone too much into it, no.
Yeah, and I think there can be something really freeing about that as well, just like following your own intuition and your own instincts and feeling what feels right and, you know, going down that way instead of like over-intellectualizing as well, like by reading, you know, every book or trying to like unpack what it all means. Has entering into this world helped you with your own relationships as far as like communication and, you know, how to sort of navigate being in relation to other people?
Absolutely. Like I think I spoke, like I kept it quite secret when I first was sort of into this and with my relationships and was quite hidden. But now I'm very upfront about it, no matter where I've met you, about what I do for work and what I'm into. And I think just for my sake, but also for their sake, like I don't want to feel like I'm lying to them or holding something back from them. Like if it's not their cup of tea, that's fine. I understand that. But I just wanted to be pretty clear up front that this is what I do. And so they're not, you know, we haven't dated for a month or two, and all of a sudden, like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm like a niche internet micro celebrity who wears weird outfits. So gotcha. But yeah, so I definitely, it's helped me communicate more clearly about who I am and what I want from relationships. Haven't found the right one for me just yet.
Mm-hmm. Is it a deal breaker? Like, if you're, say, you've just started seeing someone and then you have that initial chat and they go, oh, this is just like, this is absolutely not going to work out. Like, is there a gray area in which they're like kind of open to it and you're like, okay, I'm going to, I'll persist in, like, you know, trying to see whether this goes anywhere.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's definitely not a deal breaker as such. I mean, I guess with what I do and in the relationships I sort of seek now, we're sort of open, and I don't think one person can be all things to one person. So I know there's particular things that I like to do not everyone's going to want to do. And that might be vice versa for them. There's not necessarily things I can do for them all the time that they want. So that's also been probably my more recent relationship, something that's been really clear that while I always like want to have that primary partner, I totally have the respect if they want to pursue things with other people or, you know, want to have a get together with someone else or anything like that. Like, as far as I would consider myself like ethically non-monogamous, I do need that. Like, I feel like I need that primary romantic partner. I don't feel like I can have more than one of those, but yeah, it's definitely been something quite open. So it's not a deal breaker, just as long as they're accepting and open in mind of what I like, and that they're not going to, I guess, try and stand in the way of pursuing what I want to pursue, and I won't stand in the way of what they want to pursue.
And so do you have certain relationships or connections with people that are really just, they're just really in that BDSM space, like, but they would be very like emotional as well, but not necessarily sexual? Do you sort of have a few connections with people like that where it's really just in that play space, that BDSM play space?
I mean, yes and no. Like, it's kind of funny because I sort of do this for work now. There's people that I like collaborate with and we shoot with a lot. We have no romantic connection, but we do, you know, have sex with each other or play with each other on camera quite regularly. But it's not necessarily like a relationship that just persists around play. And I think that's something that I've sort of realized lately a little bit too, that because I do it for a job, you sort of don't find yourself doing it for fun as much as you would like to. And it's sort of something that I've tried to focus on a little bit more lately and actually still try and get the enjoyment out of it and doing it off camera, which is, you know, that's one of those things, like, everything is content when you're in this industry, but sometimes it doesn't have to be content. You can just enjoy it for what it is. So that's something I've sort of been pursuing a little bit of late, just trying to make sure I still do have that like passion and enjoyment for what I do, and it's not all about just creating a product for someone else to consume. But yeah, like, obviously I'm very fortunate, my friendship group, we're all very open and honest and within the industry in some capacity, so we can all be very honest and communicative about what we're doing and how we're feeling at the time. It's not necessarily kink or BDSM, it's relationships or work or however that sort of intertwines.
So there's a lot of support. You feel like you're in a really good community.
I have like my little, like, you know, I wouldn't say clique, but my little group of friends that we all sort of look out for each other in. I think we're quite good at communicating with each other, and I know there's probably one in particular that sort of probably has a lot of emotional burden. Like, she's always there when I need to talk about something, and I do feel guilty about that sometimes, but yeah, she's always there for me when I need someone to talk to, and I'm really lucky for that as well.
So you have a friend who is your emotional.
I mean, I have a few, but I know there's one, and she'll know exactly who I'm talking about if she listens to this. Who it is? And she's always there for me, and quite, I get not pragmatic and rational, but also just knows when it's time that you just, like, it doesn't always have to be a solution to your problem, which I think. Which is something that I can find too. I can do sometimes that when people come to me with issues, I try and fix it. But sometimes you just got to be about just like hearing it out, which is really good like that. And it's like those moments when you just feel like you want to be a bit of a diva and just have a bit of a sulk or a whinge about something. Doesn't necessarily you need a solution to that problem, but just feeling listened to and get it out. And then when you're ready to actually have the discussion about the solutions for it, then they're there for that as well. And I try to be like that to my friends as well. Like, sometimes you just want to rant and just get it out. But I like to think I'm there for them as well. If they actually want to try and find a way to work through it or whatever they need, I'll try and be there for my friends like that in that case as well. So, yeah.
Do you feel that's like beautiful. There's a strong, supportive kind of kink scene within Melbourne?
I wouldn't say small. I've met some really great people and in the industry, I think particularly now, like in a professional setting, like most of my connections are through whether they're pro doms or anything like that, where I have those connections I've sort of come up with them. So we're all sort of entering the scene as like baby kinksters and now they've all sort of, we're all like doing it as a job weirdly. But yeah, there's some really great people doing some really amazing work. Like a friend of mine, Star, she runs Damask Magazine, which is effectively the whole thing is it publishes a magazine about kink and fetish and in Melbourne, supports a lot of great local artists and does pieces on them. I'm in this month's
issue. Good plug. Amazing. Good plug.
She does a lot of amazing work and there's a lot of people in the community that really like put so much work into making it an inclusive and inviting environment. So I'd forget to reel them off now and I feel bad for I haven't like said everyone. But yeah, there's some people who do some really great work to make people feel included and accepted and feel comfortable and provide platforms for them to express themselves freely. So
amazing. Yeah. Expressing themselves freely. When I think of kink and BDSM, I think of basically what you just said then, creativity. It's such an opportunity for like stretching deep inside your own creativity as far as like creating a scene or the intention or like what you're going to wear, what you're going to bring, how you're going to present. You know, I know for Liam and I, we have, we're really into BDSM as well. I think we owe a lot of our non-monogamy and polyamory, our ability to be non-monogamous and polyamorous to our very early days of discussing our interests and sharing about BDSM.
Yeah, we were sending like kink.com at the time, which yep. I was, I've been a big fan of ever since for a very long time. But that was like I remember initially when Abby and I were having this conversation, she was like, oh, so what are you into? And I just like get one particular website and just send it over and go, what do you think about this?
Wow, this is amazing. Let's go deeper. And it was actually discovering each other through this lens of kink and BDSM that just helped carve the way for so many other conversations that we've had as the years have gone on. And it's been an amazing opportunity for creativity and just the imagination and also people who, we've met different people in our lives who probably wouldn't consider themselves as being creative people, but in their BDSM and their kink life,
they're creative,
like deeply creative people.
Yeah. I feel like for me, like my Instagram, realistically is my creative expression. So I think I was quite a creative kid and I liked, drawing and art and that sort of stuff and then got sort of pushed down that's not going to pay your bills, get a real job sort of path. And I sort of really felt suppressed in my creativity. And I guess this has reemerged and come out as my creative expression. And I have an eye for detail and those sort of things. And I really appreciate other people have that sort of eye for detail. And I'm not much into astrology, but when I tell people I'm a Virgo, like, oh yeah, that's because you're a Virgo. And like when I'm like,
so
okay,
organized
yeah,
and clean,
yeah.
I'm everything's
like,
lined up.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily like you've seen my, okay, it's like one extreme of my apartment's either like immaculate or like horrendous. So, but like things like that and like detail and, how do I style things and stuff is how I express myself and how my creativity sort of, comes out. So definitely. And I like you were saying before, like when you you make yourself as vulnerable expressing some kinks and stuff, those are really hard things to say. So once those are on the table, then everything else feels a lot easier. When you've expressed you like to be spanked, then saying that you don't like sugar in your coffee is a lot easier to say. Those things, when you had those hard conversations quite early on, like I said, like I like to be quite upfront about what I do. It makes everything a lot easier from then on because you've really made yourself quite vulnerable and giving yourself a part of yourself that they can sort of see who you really are. And it makes some of the hard conversations a lot easier.
gives people the opportunity as well to self-select themselves in or out of your life.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you'd rather be fully accepted for who you are
exactly.
than be feeling like you're hiding.
Yeah. You know? And that was a lot of, I spent a lot of time worrying about what people thought of me. People that I hadn't seen in 10 years or never had anything to do with, but I was worried about what they or their opinions of me were. And I was like, why am I spending so much energy on people that I don't even like what they think of me? And you still do it a little bit from time to time. Like, you get a bit like, oh, fuck, what's going to happen here or whatever. But, I sort of just thought, I want to make the people around me who make me happy, happy. So, I'm not going to worry about some douchebag from high school.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because when I land on your Instagram, it is so inarguably incredible. Like, just in terms of like the aesthetic, like your eye with the photographers that you shoot with, like it feels like to me there is no argument for some dickhead from, you know, year 10 to come around and be like, oh, look at this. Like, what a Muppet. Like,
they're just jealous. Potentially, I mean, it's funny. Like, I was in high school so long ago. Like, I'm 32 now. So it's just like, whatever. But it's just funny how this like person like reemerged into my life and it was like trying to like diss me. And I'm like, and I can't take credit for all the stuff I do. Like, I work with some really like talented, amazing photographers and artists. So it's not all just me like taking control. I would never say that. But yeah, I am really proud of some of the stuff I've created and I think it's really cool. So that's, I mean, I'm not necessarily ashamed of it. And even not at all ashamed of it. It's just funny how some people try and cast that sort of dispersion over things when they're not comfortable with themselves. So
Do you find that like your kind of public persona of like with all the latex stuff and all this type of thing, do you feel that within your personal life that's equally reflected, or do you almost have this kind of like alter ego of like the kinks that you're really into that you put on Instagram because maybe everyone just sees you now as this like latex god. Whereas in your personal life you might be into, you know,
I mean, yes and no. Like, there's definitely like an online persona. I'm definitely probably, I know my friends will probably argue, but I'm a bit more of a diva online than I am in person, but they'll probably say, no, you're a diva all the time. I mean, yes and no. Like, there's always things you want to explore more, and like, I, you know, I was always like wary like being like typecast into the rubber guy. Like, I do try and explore other avenues and different things. And I even try and portray that on my account. But like, ultimately, this is my thing. This is what I really like and I'm passionate about. And it's created great opportunities for me. So yeah, I do. I feel like to explore other things that aren't totally in line with that, I guess, kink or fetish. But predominantly, it mostly is what I'm into and what I enjoy partaking in. Yeah.
Amazing. And what does your, have you done the BDSM score? Oh, how does that one show up?
I don't do it.
You haven't done it?
I mean,
you don't want to be put in boxes.
I have done it before, but I am big on that. I don't like being put in categories, and I've always been that way, whether it's my kinks, my sexuality, what I'm a dom or a sub or a switch.
93% switch.
Yeah, maybe. But okay. I always just found like I remember, like, I don't know if you guys are probably on FetLife and stuff like that. And everyone,
we do have an account, but we're not active in the BDSM.
Yeah,
community.
Yeah. I'm not on there really either. FetLife's, but like, so many people like use that on there. And I get for some people that's really important for them to find a category and where they belong. But it just was never that important to me. And I was always kind of fluid and just liked exploring it. And like, ultimately, I would just call myself like a hedonist. Like, I want to feel good, make other people feel good and have a good time. So having this like putting myself in this one category of this is what I am, this is what I do, just felt very limiting to me. I think I did it years ago, but I didn't really take much of it on board because it wasn't that important to me. Like, labels to me, I guess I'm fortunate in a position where I'm quite comfortable with who I am. I don't need to have a label to feel valid or belong somewhere, which I totally understand for some people that's really, really important to them. But to me, I'm quite lucky that I just am comfortable with who I am and I don't need to put myself in a pigeonhole to feel like I belong somewhere, I guess.
And for anybody who wants to learn more about that, it's like a beautiful opportunity for them to have a conversation with you and get to know you and figure out more about which way you're going sort of at the moment. Is it do you feel like it's sometimes an unfolding journey as to where you're at? It's like sometimes you might be feeling more submissive.
Absolutely.
And into certain
different
things and other
times. I feel like different people bring out different things in you. So this is what I always say. Like, some people you just like, oh, I want to like fuck you up or whatever. Like, but then there's sometimes like, I want you to fuck me up. Like, just like sort of an energy they have. And don't know, I'm a bit of a people pleaser, so I just want to make people feel good. So if I am topping people, I'm like more of like a service top. Like I'm just like doing things that I know they will like.
Yeah.
But yeah, like different people bring out different energies and different things in you. So I to say that I'm just like one thing and I only want to do these things just doesn't really fit for me. So yeah, like those people, different people's energies bring out different things for me. So
you feel that when you put on the rubber, you could be either submissive or a top?
Potentially. I think when I put on the hood, I'm definitely like submissive. Like that sort of puts you in that headspace for me anyway, when I'm like fully like rubbered up, I guess is the best way to put it. But yeah, like the hood definitely puts you in that, I guess, puts me in like that submissive mindset. But yeah, it really is like situational and what the person you're with or playing with or the people you're playing with, what they want to do in the scene or whatever is happening really dictates how I'm feeling and what kind of energy I'm bringing to that play, I guess.
I do have some logistics questions with the rubber stuff. I've never worn any rubber. So, and I imagine it's like such a crazy experience, but the logistics things that come to mind is I imagine it's like incredibly hard. Like you're wearing these full body, just like epic rubber suits. Can you walk us through what is actually required to get into one?
There's a few different ways you can do it. There's talcum powder, which is, I guess, you can put in the inside and it like sort of slides on quite easy because it's quite even though it looks quite shiny and slippery, it's quite a tactile material, so it can be quite grippy. Or you can use like a thing like dressing aid or like a silicone-based lube, which is what I use. So you pretty much either just like spray your body or spray both in the inside of the rubber and it will like slide on. And that's how you get in. And sometimes it's easier to do it in the shower. If your body's a little bit wet, it also makes sure like less friction. So effectively what it's doing is just creating less friction so things can slide on. For me, that's what I use because it's also better for, I guess, longer term wear because talc can get a bit clumpy and milky underneath your skin because obviously latex doesn't breathe that much either. So there's a lot of sweat going underneath.
So a full bodysuit, how long would it take you to get on?
Me, like I've been doing this for years.
You're a pro.
Yeah. Probably, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I remember when I first started doing it, probably half an hour. But
yeah.
I guess that's just knowing the friction points and where you've got to like make sure you've got lube and stuff like that, like your shoulders and your butt and stuff like that. And you're like where things are going to grip.
But it is like it's like a journey to get it on.
Yeah.
Like even 15 minutes.
For some people, that's like the pleasure in it and the fun in it. And a lot of people enjoy watching that as well, like people putting it on and getting dressed in it. And that's the big part of it. It's not necessarily just having it on, then it's time to play. Like the actual dressing aspect of it is what I find enjoyable sometimes as well and what a lot of people enjoy about it as well. So, and it's also very like ASMR sort of, there's also clicky and rubby noises a lot of people enjoy.
I think one of your big TikTok like hits is like you putting on a glove. I went down a TikTok rabbit hole and it's like you putting on a glove or something in
slow-mo. That's the one that really sort of blew up. I'm a bit like in trouble with TikTok these days. Like nothing gets any traction, but that one got like 3 million views and like 300,000 likes.
Have you seen this,
babe? I haven't
seen
it.
Pretty much just getting dressed and a friend of mine shot it and it came up really, really cool. And
it looks
just
beautiful as well.
It just blew up. And then there was, you know, everyone who's never seen latex before just thinks Kim Kardashian was the first person to do it. So there's people like on TikTok, obviously not from the kink scene, like, oh my God, like Kim Kardashian vibes or American Horror Story vibes. I'm like, oh my God, it did exist before those things happened. But I understand that your exposure to it is probably something that one of the Kardashians wore at an awards night or something. But yeah, I mean, it's funny watching people who outside of the community comment on that sort of stuff and not really understand what the hell's going on. Most of it's quite positive. There's always some people that are trying to troll you or whatever on there, but it's doesn't really worry me. It's like when there's millions of people are viewing it, there's always going to be some idiot.
Because another thing as well, what I hear is that it like really heightens your sensitivity to touch. So in terms of like wearing it, does it do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's it's a lot of people refer to it as like a second skin. I mean, it probably almost to a degree lessens it because obviously you're wearing like a layer over your skin. So when you feel something, it's really intense, I guess. And like it's also to do with like sensory deprivation. Like if you are wearing a hood or a mask or blindfold or anything like that, then you're, I guess, hypersensual to touch and feel and stuff like that. But it's just like a different type of touch, I guess, because it's not skin on skin. It's through something else. But it is one of those things, like when it's really hot, you'll feel really hot. And when it's really cold, you'll feel really cold. Because it, yeah, it's quite a thin material, but it also doesn't breathe that well.
So. Okay, one last logistics question.
Okay.
Last logistics question.
Liam and his logistics. Yeah.
Because it's fascinating. So then, like, how long would you typically stay in a suit? Because I imagine eventually, if it's like super hot in there, it would reach the point where it's no longer, and maybe the discomfort is also could be some of the eroticism behind it. But what's like a rough amount of time?
I mean, it's so.
Is it very just?
Well, it depends on what you're doing. Like, if I'm going to an event or a party, I might wear it for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours potentially.
Oh wow, okay. Wow.
Yeah. But if I'm just like doing a shoot, maybe like an hour or two.
Okay.
Like obviously, if you're doing it, you're wearing it for a long time. You're very selective. Like if I'm going to a party where I'm going to be wearing latex or some sort of outfit for extended period of times, maybe I won't wear the full cat suit because it's quite sweaty and can be uncomfortable. But you sort of acclimatized to it a little bit as well, I find. Once you've got, once the initial like hour or so of your body, like, oh, I'm hot, sweaty, you sort of get used to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it really just depends on what you're doing and like on the temperature as well. So if it's like a 30 degree day, you're probably not going to spend that much time in it. But if it's, you know, cooler evening, it's quite comfortable to wear for extended period of time, as long as you've guess lubed up probably. And that's the thing, when you start sweating, it sort of starts to move with you a little bit freer as well, because it's like lubricated under your skin. So actually sometimes the longer you wear it, the more easier it is to wear.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, everyone's different. Some people, the sensory can be a bit too much for them over an extended period of time, but I'm quite okay with it.
And then do you get them custom made?
Yeah, I have to because I'm quite a big guy and I have a sort of big physique. So a lot of my stuff, especially cat suits and stuff like that, has to be made to measure, like gloves and like underwear and stuff you can sort of get off the rack. But for me personally, I do have to get a lot of stuff made to measure because I am quite tall.
And are they made by like local artisans?
Yeah, I have a few people locally. So a friend, Latex 42, is a Melbourne designer.
Shout out.
Latex, he made my cat suit with the ROR written on the back. There's Debauch Latex, which is a friend of mine who's in Melbourne as well. And she made like the really frilly one that you probably saw. She made that. Yeah. There's a few guys like Cathedral Latex. She makes amazing stuff with like lots of patterns and sort of almost like church spires and all that sort of stuff is really beautiful. And then there's a friend of mine in Melbourne, Matt Violet Design, who I do a lot of catwalks and stuff for. He makes really intricate, cool latex designs that no one else is really doing. Like his background is in like costume design. So he worked on like Xena and Hercules and like Star Wars and stuff. So he's got a really crazy background in making like prosthetics and stuff like that, and makes really cool stuff that no one really else is doing. So, yeah, I'm really lucky that I've sort of made these networks and friendships within like the designers as well, who let me wear some of their stuff sometimes. And yeah,
it's cool. Wow. Oh my gosh, I'm feeling so inspired. I've never worn rubber before, which is so.
Wow. I know. I'm just thinking this whole conversation, I'm just like, God, we got to get you a suit.
I'm like, what have we been doing? I feel like for us,
you would kill it. You would absolutely crush it.
I feel like for us, a lot of our. BDSM play is quite emotional as well. We've sort of go down that road more like power dynamics.
Yeah.
You know, not always in the outfit, but now I'm like, I'm feeling so insanely inspired.
Well, good. This is what I'm here for.
Oh my gosh.
Spreading the word.
Everything's buzzing. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm just
indoctrinating the population.
Exactly. Yeah. I've got a birthday coming up. So,
you know. There you go.
Just dropping some hints right now. Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet.
And do you find that like when you get in the outfit, the new persona really, like you really can lean into that more? Like if you're feeling in a subby mood, you put on the outfit and you just can get into it more? Or do you feel like, you know, it's more about the connection with
Does. Like it does feel like you sort of put on your superhero suit there sometimes and you like just get, put you in a bit of like a horny, mischievous mood.
Yeah.
And it definitely there's like heightens whatever you're feeling at that time. And I guess if, particularly if there's other people wearing it as well with who you're playing with, then it does get really nice, you know, really horny.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, so cool.
Have you traveled overseas to kind of explore like modeling or anything like that?
No. So this is like the thing that I'm sort of working towards at the moment. Like
once you go to Berlin,
I know.
You just crushed Berlin.
I know.
They're going to cancel your passport.
I have so many like friends overseas and stuff that I've like met online and stuff, and like, please come over here. They want to work with me and stuff. And Yeah, at the moment I'm just really trying to build myself, my brand and my following enough so I can, guess, make that a possibility, because I've sort of, it's not as financially lucrative as some people may see it as being. So so I have to work really hard to try and make those a possibility. And like, it's one of those catch-22s. Like, I feel like if when I get to Europe and work with some of these other creators and big names, that it will help my brand and following grow. But at the same time, I need to have a big enough following so I can get there and that be financially viable. So it is one of those things where you're like, so you know, cutting off your nose to spite your face, like you have to just make that call and hopefully that it works out, or you know, really save up and make sure that if it doesn't work out, you've still got something to come back to.
For sure.
Yeah.
Do you ever have people reaching out to you as like a mentor? You know.
Yeah, a bit. I try and be. It's funny, like within like the content creator world, you do get people reaching out, and I am quite honest with them. Like I said to you before, that this all sort of come out organically. I didn't set out to be a content creator. It just sort of happened through what I was passionate about and who are my friends and what I was seeking to create. So I'm always a little bit apprehensive about mentoring people, because I think particularly with men in our industry, sometimes they can fuck up and I don't want their name attached to me if they do something stupid, which is sort of a shit way to be, but it's also, it's a little bit of self-preservation sometimes. Like I'm happy to give some like advice and stuff, but when it becomes like they actually, you know, like be a mentor or something like that, I'm always a little bit apprehensive, unless I've sort of really know them quite personally and know they're a sort of a safe person and like someone I can trust. Because I think particularly in the adult industry, there's always people who are doing it for maybe the wrong reasons, or they think, you know, it's just a good opportunity to have sex with beautiful people and think they're going to get paid for it. And like, but those sort of people are usually quite self-vetting. It's like when I sort of tell them like, oh, I got into it this way, they think I'm being a smart ass or something. I'm like, no, that's just how it happened. I'm like, I'm sorry if it's not, I didn't give you some sort of secret code or password into a secret club, but that's how it happens, that's how it works. Like people, I get to do all these things because people trust me and I build up trust and respect in the community. So yeah, it's one of those things that I'm always like, happy to give it like some like base level advice on how I did, like how to go about things. But most of it's just telling them just to be like respectful and trustworthy and a good person. There's not that much, there's not some
humanity.
Secret, yeah. There's not some secret community that we all hang out and like, in like indoctrinate people and like, you know,
give you haven't been branded.
Secret tattoo,
not a BDSM
cult. Yeah.
And did you have any like professional dominatrix that you worked with at all in your journey, teaching you different things?
Thank you for listening to the Evolving Love podcast. A quick reminder, if you're loving this conversation, hit subscribe and drop a comment on your podcast platform.
If you are interested in receiving 2 extra premium podcast episodes each month, you can become a premium subscriber at evolvingloveproject.substack.com. Now let's get back to the conversation.
I mean, I've worked with a few. Yeah, I've been lucky that I have a lot of people in the industry actually. I guess not necessarily as mentors, but just more so as friends, and whether we've played together or just shot together or just had discussions. Like I don't think I've really had a specific mentor as such, but I definitely have some great friendships and sort of built relationships with people in the industry. And pretty much just through like common interests and like into the same things and almost, not necessarily even have to like partake in them, but just having discussions around them and what, you know, excites you and what you like about those certain things and, you know, comparing notes and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I definitely have pro doms. I have a lot of pro dom friends, which is cool. But, yeah, it's just more about just like just talking about things, not necessarily partaking in them as well, I think, is what a lot of people probably don't understand. Like I'm not going around getting fucking railed by a pro dom every second night. Like that's not where it works all the time. I mean, sometimes I might be, but not all the time. And it's more just about like friendships and connections and common interests really than it is about necessarily always playing with each other or having sex with each other or whatever that amounts to. So
for sure.
Yeah.
That sounds quite similar, I think, for us and being non-monogamous. I think sometimes people can think, oh, that means you're like always having sex with different people all of the time and you're having sex with all of your non-monogamous friends all of the time. And it's like, well, no.
Yeah.
These are our friends who we hang out with and like we don't have the time or energy to be doing all of that all the time. You know, just because we're open to that doesn't mean it's like our whole life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, exactly. That's probably, like, I think, similar to our friendship group too. Like, probably, everyone just probably thinks we're all fucking each other, but actually our friendships are all quite platonic. And I think that's the thing too. Like, I have a lot of female friends, and I'd probably say like 80% of my friends, particularly in the industry, are women.
Mm.
And I think outside looking in, people sort of think that we're all just like having sex with each other. But
yeah.
I think it's sometimes hard for people to understand that you can have platonic relationships with women, particularly outside of like the, I guess, polyamory, non-monog kink sort of community, that they don't understand that. But I'm like, no, I'm quite happy having female friends that I don't have sex with, or feel like I need to have sex with to feel like it's a worthwhile friendship. So
how do you feel about like vanilla sex? Is that something that like
I love it. Yeah. I mean, this is a thing. Like, this is probably one of the things people think, because I'm into that, that's everything I have to do. Like, I have to be like hung from the ceiling, I have a car battery hooked up to my nipples to come or something. Like, which, you know, sometimes that'd be great, but it's not always the case. Like, I love missionary. Like, let's do that. Like, let's have some slow, passionate, smoochy, sweaty sex. Like, that's also great. And I love that. Yeah, I think it's probably a misconception that people, because this is what I sort of pursue and it's one of my passions, that's what is required to orgasm or enjoy myself having sex, which for me is just not reality. It might be for other people, but yeah, I love having sex just in any setting, I guess.
Because I think about it, like, certainly with myself, like, I've always thought about like, and the way in which like porn is consumed, that idea of like sexual ramping. And I think about that in the way it relates to like BDSM dynamics. And it's like once you kind of maybe get into spanking, and then eventually you do have like a battery on your nipples, like hung from the ceiling.
Yeah.
But there is that misconception that once you're down on a path of like BDSM or kink or non-monogamy or whatever it might be, that you're just going to end up in the most extreme version of that with no ability to actually jump back to the beginning and say, oh, actually, yeah, but I can just be into everything.
Like, I think it's when you like explore those things you've been fantasizing about, it's sort of, it's a little bit liberating and freeing, and it probably makes you even easier to go back to just having those sort of more sensual and like connective sexual experiences. So once you've experienced that fantasy you're sort of building up for such a long time, it can be quite freeing and liberating. So you can sort of enjoy the more basic sort of primal instincts rather than the super intense BDSM kink play. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, that's my experience anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you sometimes see interesting relationship dynamics happen in the BDSM world? You know, how a relationship might come to be in a BDSM sense as opposed to a romantic sense, or like multiple people, I guess, thinking about, you know, I guess in a polyamorous or a non-monogamous perspective, you know, there might be a couple where, you know, they have a certain dynamic with each other, but then, you know, with another person, there's like a conflicting dynamic at play.
I feel like I've been in those situations at time to time. Like, I wouldn't necessarily, this is probably more of a polyamory perspective, but I wouldn't necessarily call myself a lifestyle kink. Like, people who like live in a sub dominant sort of dynamic, that's not what I would sort of consider myself or not necessarily want to pursue. But people do it, and they find fulfillment in that. I think from like polyamory perspective, like, I guess I've been in relationships where they might be my primary priority, but they have other priorities as well. And like, I was always okay with that. Like, I'm fine with that. It's just as long as it's just like communicated and open and honest about that. That situation didn't necessarily work out. I mean, I think they felt they couldn't be all I wanted them to be, because I was probably all in. But yeah, it's just one of those situations where you just sort of have to suck it up and move on. Like, it was hard, but you gotta work through it. Still quite close to that person. We have like a bit of a complex relationship even now, but I care about them. I know they care about me. I think they just felt they couldn't be what I needed them to be, and probably realistically they probably couldn't. And it might have boiled over to a point where it became quite toxic, and they probably had the courage to end it before it got to that point. But yeah, that's one of those things about, you know, I guess I wouldn't necessarily call myself polyamorous, because I don't think I would have more than one romantic partner. But I would call myself ethically non-monogamous, because while I want to have that primary person who's like sort of my rock, I do want us to be able to explore with other people and enjoy things that we're with other people. Because like I said earlier, like you can't be all things to one person. Well, I don't think you can anyway.
Because it makes me think back to a time many years ago when Liam and I went out on a date with another couple, and I had actually been dating him separately. And with him, he and I had a bit of a thing where he was a bit dominant over me and I was more submissive.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when we went out for dinner, the four of us, for us to meet his other partner, he was incredibly conflicted because with her, he was her submissive.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And they were more like a lifestyle.
Yeah, no, they had a lifestyle I can definitely understand that too. And I think that's even with like lifestyle people who see me online and think because they're a dominant, they can just instantly like have dominance over me. And I just, like, I have to respect you to want to submit or do whatever with you. So it does, sometimes it gets to me a little bit when like you're at a party or something and someone's like, they're a dom and they just come up and start treating you like they're submissive.
No. Red flag.
To me, I'm like, no. Sorry, I mean,
that's the quickest way to filter out.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, like, I'm sure they've got good intentions, but I'm like, I'm not just a sub to anyone who says they're a dom. You know what I mean? It's not.
Totally.
Because you would have people kind of engaging in this parasocial relationship with you because you are posting so much. Like, people feel like they would know you so well. And then they're seeing you at a party and they're like, shit, that's
like,
him.
I've had people like to see me out in a nightclub or something, like wearing clothes and like ask me like why I'm not wearing latex. I'm like, I do. I mean, I know I probably created this fantasy that I'm just living in that 24 hours a day, but I do actually just go out and like cotton sometimes, you know? Like, oh, I didn't recognize you outside of latex or rubber or something. I'm like, oh, okay. Cool. But yeah, it's a funny one when people say that to you or, for also when like you're just like walking down the street and then you'll get home and I'm like, oh, I saw you today walking down this street. And I'll be like, yep, I mean, cool. Either should have said hey or just don't say anything at all because that just makes you feel a bit weird now. Yeah.
Like, I
mean,
I think
they're like excited that they've seen you. They want to like express it, but I just think something that comes across as really a bit like uncomfortable.
Oh my god!
Is so weird.
So stalkery.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. People making presumptions like that they can just immediately position themselves as your dom or something. I think I've had a couple of times in the past there was someone who slid into my DMs and he was like, "Hey, baby girl," and I was like, "No,
you don't know me. Get out.
Yeah,
get out.
Yeah."
Or even the fact that like Abby is sharing about these things, and you know we're talking about like, you know, sexuality, they just assume that they have, it's going to immediately ramp into that.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's always funny. Like, I'll usually try and reply to most people that talk to me and just be quite nice. And it's funny how quickly they try and turn the conversation sexually. Like, sometimes I'm just sort of just like seeing, like playing a game to see how quickly they'll try and send me a picture of their penis or, you know, try and turn the conversation kinky. But yeah, that's always a bit of a, it just depends how bored I am that day, I guess, how much I want to indulge in those sort of conversations and see how long it takes before we're in that sort of sphere.
Because I have noticed that there is like a lot of discussion in some of the comment sections around guys, like gay guys trying to be like, is he gay? Like it's like this, like almost like trying to bait you to like discuss your sexuality in this like big kind of grandiose way.
Yeah. I mean, that is a tough one for me to navigate.
Yeah.
Like I probably describe myself as queer, but straight leaning. I don't generally find cis men attractive sexually anyway. I can appreciate a good looking man, you know, I can appreciate their style and stuff like that, but it doesn't, you know, get me all hot under the collar. And I don't know, I think sometimes because I do sort of express myself so freely and express my femininity or whatever that is, that can be, I guess, interpreted as me being gay or which I can understand. And like, I've always sort of been wary that I don't want to be necessarily like queer baiting or anything like that. I don't want to think like I'm sort of trivializing homosexuality or trying to, you know, capitalize on it. I've always tried to be really clear that I'm just trying to express myself and almost normalize being like this and feeling comfortable in who you are. I understand for some people that can be confusing and not what they necessarily feel. But yeah, it's a difficult thing to navigate. Because, you know, I appreciate the compliments and the niceties and stuff like that. But yeah, it does wear a little thin sometimes when you see, like, in the comment section, just like constantly just like badgering me about my sexuality and stuff like that. I mean, like I said before, like, I'm not huge on labels. It's not that important to me. And I just feel like some people are trying to push me into a certain thing you know, push my boundaries, or, you know, feel like I have to do a certain thing to belong in a certain space. Which is, I don't think it's really fair. And it's
gatekeeping.
It's interesting. And it's like, I always like thinking, like, Tanley is like, if my sexuality did align with you, do you think that makes us automatically compatible? That's what I think sometimes it's always mistake as well. And that's the same with like kinks and fetishes. Like, oh, we're into the same stuff. So that must make us automatically compatible.
Yes. Now we have to play with each other. Yeah,
exactly. Which is just not the case.
Yeah.
So it crosses a lot of things, but that's probably one of the things too, that's like assumed compatibility, whether it's your sexuality, your kink or your fetish or, you know, what you look like. I mean, people just assume that makes you compatible, which it really doesn't. It's so much about chemistry and, you know, so many other things. And it is just those sort of really, I guess, tangible similarities.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes me think, remember how we went to a munch?
Yes.
When was that? We went to a FetLife munch a while back in Canberra, and there was such an awkward moment where I think I've changed my profile since then, but I didn't have much on my profile, but I had a few things about myself and about Liam and I. And it was so interesting. It was so weird, actually quite uncomfortable. But this man came up to me and he mentioned my FetLife name. And then he like put his arm on my shoulder and started leaning on me and talking to me as if I was his like submissive or something. And it was just so wild to me be in that situation. It just shocked me.
The familiarity with some people, they think, because they think they've seen a picture online that you have some sort of relationship.
Oh, yeah.
It was
or think they know a little bit about your dynamic that they can just come up to you and indulge in that. It's I mean, it comes across all walks of life, people being overzealous with their controlling other people's boundaries and what they think is appropriate.
I mean, this guy we ended up making complaints about, like, because he repeatedly did it, and that was the crazy.
And you probably weren't the first person to say this about this person.
And we found that out.
That's the only thing. It can be a little bit of a minefield sometimes as people that see new people to the scene and sort of are quite predatory because they know they haven't probably heard the things that other people have experienced with them. So they try and, I guess, prey on that.
Because you're kind of like, you were mentioning it before, you're almost like an elder statesman of the king scene.
I wouldn't, you know? I can't say that because there will be the elder statesman like, okay, no, he's not.
he hasn't done 50 years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've been around for a while, but I'm also very aware, like, I will always speak on my own experiences, but I don't try and speak on the experiences of the community as a whole because everyone's experience is different and how they found themselves where they are. So to speak on everyone, on behalf of everyone, I think is just irresponsible, to be honest, because I don't know what everyone's gone through at that point of time. I can speak on my own experiences with a particular person or a group or event, but I can't speak on everyone's behalf.
Yeah, because do you feel like there is, like, in certain online spaces, like FetLife being the obvious one, being like a kink space, but is there kind of a lot of stuff that happens in those online communities that can sometimes turn counterproductive in terms of the way that people associate?
Yeah, I mean, FetLife's a bit of a minefield. I don't spend a lot of time. I remember when I was first trying to find my way, I spent some time in there trying to like get to know people. But then once you sort of meet people in person in these communities, once you've sort of found your space, you sort of move away from that. People sort of living wholly online on that sort of FetLife space can be a bit of a weird place because I think it's almost like that keyboard warrior aspect where they're not a real person. When you sort of find your people and, you know, get to know the person behind the display picture is when you sort of find out where you belong. And like FetLife can still have has its benefits because you can advertise like kink events and stuff on there where you can
and
find.
Modeling, I'm sure you'd find photographers maybe
Not me. I know people have.
Yeah, okay.
That can also be a bit of a minefield because there can be some sketchy photographers and stuff.
I've definitely seen those profiles.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm a photographer and I'm looking for rope bunnies.
Most of the time I'll shoot people and like I'll know or have references, I've seen their work and like I ask people, generally like we all talk. We all reach out to each other and ask people's references and what their experience has been like.
Who is your dream photographer to work with? If you could pick anyone in the world.
I really, really, really want to work with Reflective Desires. So they're like they're Canada based and they just do some amazing, cool, like really sleek, like latex. Just like
kink stuff?
Yeah. Like their content creator, like just even just like their photography, their work is just like really cool.
Because surely you're at a stage now with like, because you have such a big portfolio. Mm. Well, it kind of seems to me to be a big portfolio. Like you could approach any photographer and be like, are you looking for models? And they'd essentially want to work with you.
Yes and no. Like I always want to, because I'm in an artistic field and you always want to be respectful of people's time and how they make money. So I never want to expect that I'm going to get a shoot for free or anything like that. Like I always try and be very respectful of their hustle and what they're doing to pay the bills. Sometimes I feel like maybe I should do it more. I generally wait for people to reach out to me because I don't want to feel like I'm overstepping or being a bit, you know, I'm a big name. You're so lucky to work with me. Mm. I generally try and wait for other people to reach out to me so then I know it's like it's mutual, I guess. And like sometimes I think maybe I should be a little bit more proactive and be more confident in myself and about who wants to work with me. But like I said, there's lots of people overseas that have reached out to me and said, if you're ever here, like I'd love to work with you. I'm just in that stage now of trying to make that a reality. So
yeah.
Subscribe if you can.
No. Because we've had situations where, because I take the photos that are on Evolving Love Project, where I'll get hit up by like traveling models and they'll be like, okay, for this amount of money, you can shoot with me, which is awesome. And it feels like there's almost like a circuit of models who potentially just kind of move around the world and then have this kind of like Rephidex of photographers that they hit up when they're in the city.
Because
I find that similar models will hit me up a year later. And it's almost like I'm in the Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, potentially. Know? I mean, I'm super unorganized, so I'd never have the Excel spreadsheet. But I mean, I generally, if I'm heading to a city for work or whatever reasons, I'll make a post a few days before. I'm like, look, I'm in town for a few days. If anyone wants to work or shoot with each other, shoot, I would love to. I've never generally like reaching out unless they've obviously reached out to me previously and said, when you're in town next time, let me know. But yeah, I mean, that's how I like to do things. I mean, there's probably people that are a bit more organized and sort of really plan ahead, which is not me. And I know that's frustrating for some people because I can be a bit of a space cadet sometimes and just offer my own little world. But yeah, that's what works for me and that's how I like to do things. But because I just never like to assume that someone wants to shoot me or do anything. And if it is a paid shoot, I'm happy to pay other for their time because, like I said, this is a creative industry and a lot of time our work goes underappreciated and we're just expected just to constantly just churn out work. But people aren't really realizing how much what the costs and expenses are to create this art is. So when I can and if that is what required, I do like to try and pay for as much as I can, which is not always possible because it's a tough industry sometimes. And I guess particularly like sex workers, whenever there's like an economic downturn, sex workers are generally the first to feel it because we're a luxury object. So we go by the wayside when things get tough, which I understand, but it's just like one of those things about this business that we sort of have to work around and always got to be adapting and hustling and try and find new ways to, I guess, make revenue and keep the lights on and keep the bills paid. So, yeah.
And is it a question of people to get into the economics? Because I find this super interesting being a creative myself. But to get into the economics of it, is it the kind of thing where people, like models, are undercutting other models or maybe going, like if a model goes up to a photographer and goes, I'll do it for free, like it's totally fine.
I don't think so.
That mean that the whole kind of economic situation, kind of everyone gets devalued in a sense?
I wouldn't say undercut. I don't think anyone's like going and I'll do it for cheaper than that person.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's probably more to do with like and creators and like what you're selling your products for and understanding what your market is looking for. So like if you're collaborating with someone, like I've had people effectively who have big followings and they've got OnlyFans and they want to collab with me, but I have to sell a video at this certain price. Whereas my following and the people that subscribe to me just won't pay that. So they're effectively asking me to work for free. And that's a big thing about like sharing revenue and stuff in this industry, which I find really hard to navigate sometimes because well, I totally respect you've built a following and you've got those sort of like white whales, you call them, those people will pay big money to see footage. Cool. They're not going to go and subscribe to me and buy for cheap because they're subscribing to you because they're a fan of you and they want to please you. And that's the first thing you got to explain. Like, I'm not trying to undercut you here. And even if I am, if you lose one subscriber for about $10 a month because they come over to me, that's what a collaboration is. So some people don't really, it's all about their benefit. And I think, like, this is like, woe is me, but I think it's like as a male creator, that can be a thing that's hard to navigate sometimes because we do make quite a bit less than a lot of female creators. And like, I understand that coming into the industry, I knew that it's a female dominated industry. They make a lot of money. But I guess just like those pre-negotiations of what a collaboration actually looks like. And how to make sure that the revenue is shared fairly and evenly because there is a need for male talent in those spaces. So they do need us. I understand that you guys make more money than us and you could make money without us, but obviously there's a need for us because otherwise you wouldn't be shooting with us. So I think there always has to be chats about what a collaboration and a fair distribution of, I guess, the revenue looks like and having an understanding of each other's followers and knowing that, you know, if you are in a work someone doesn't mean you make 100% of the revenue. It's not you're collaborating with someone. It's a collaborated effort and they have to sort of get some benefit out of it too. And I think that's why one of those things about there's so few male talent in the industry, not only because people are in it for the, you know, might be in it for the wrong reasons, but also the fact that it's just not that financially viable. There's not enough work going around and money and I guess money going around to have a lot of male talent generating content. Like I'm quite niche what I do and quite unique. And I guess that, you know, in some ways helps me, but in some ways hinders me because I'm not appealing to a broader audience. So my audience is quite niche. So I have to make sure that I sort of factor that into my, you know, my followers and my content and the people I work with that, yes, it's, you know, helps me in some ways, but also hurts me in other ways as well. So I don't necessarily have that broad audience where I'm going to be able to sell 50 videos at, you know, $10 a pop or whatever it is, or I'm also not going to be able to sell 4 or 5 videos at $100 a pop, you know? So it's just really making sure that you're clear and communicate honestly about what you're looking to get out of the collaboration. And I guess from the get-go, because you never want to get to like the point you've shot everything and then you get home, you're like, oh yeah, you have to sell it for this much. And you're like, you've effectively asked me to work for free because like no one will buy it at that price from me. And people aren't going to unsubscribe to you and come over across to me to buy it for $5 or $10 cheaper. Like that's just not what's going to happen. You know? And if one person does that, then, I mean, realistically, you should be happy with me because I've made some money from this shoot. But otherwise, it's one of those things you've really got to have strong boundaries and stick your ground with because, you know, I don't think they're necessarily trying to exploit you, but there's just those, they're trying to look after the number one, which I understand we're all trying to look after each other ultimately. But you just got to make sure that it's a beneficial for everyone involved.
Because it's also a question of educating audiences and people who are consuming these things. Because we have things like Pornhub, we have the ability for people just to kind of get endless streams of free kind of adult entertainment. That the people who are actually creating these things, especially people, as you were saying, within the niche or who have this artistic bent, it's like, there's so much effort that goes into like planning a shoot for you, getting a location, getting a photographer, you know, getting other people to be in it with you potentially. It's like people need to be educated that that's worth something and people need to actually pay for it.
Yeah. And I think it's like, I think it's like every creative venture that there's always the, I guess, the smaller people that do a lot of the creating and then the bigger names and companies sort of see that and then do it on a big scale and make all the money from it, which is... music, film, porn, everything that happens across. So I think it's just the audience educating themselves that, yeah, you might have to pay, you know, $10 a month or it's, and it's funny watching people justify certain things. I'm like, you can go out, like my subscription might cost as much as a beer a month. And people are like, oh, it's pretty expensive. I'm like, is it though?
It really?
No, it's not. Yeah. And it's like, I work a lot to try and create this stuff for you. I'm like, yes, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like there should be some reward for effort because we work really hard. It's a lot of work. And it's not like, while it might look like we work 1 or 2 hours a week, there's so many hours of administration or on the phone, like promoting, you mm-hmm. know, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all this stuff is constant. You're on almost 24/7. Mm. So while it looks like you might just shoot once or twice a week, that's not what the reality is. There's so much hours and work and mental like labor that goes into creating this stuff that, you know, paying it for a beer a month to help someone put a roof over their head isn't that astronomical.
And then they get to have an amazing orgasm at the end of it.
Yeah, exactly right. And you can jerk off as many times as you like. Yeah, go for it. It's funny watching people justify things like that, like the cost and like saying something's too expensive. And it can be quite disrespectful. I'm like, how much value you're putting on me and my body is not worth, you know, a can of beer or it's like,
two coffees.
On. Yeah.
Not
on.
Even.
Yeah.
One and a half coffees. Yeah.
It's interesting. I think when you actually get people to look back and actually look at it from that perspective, it can change their view. Because I think, like I've spoken this, like I was, people think that you know, 0.01% person on OnlyFans is a representation of the whole community.
Mm.
And yes, those people that maybe pull in 60, 50K a month off OnlyFans, do all power to them. Well done.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not everyone.
Mm.
And while no doubt there's a lot of work that goes into that, sometimes it can be totally up to luck, like whether the algorithm on TikTok that day liked you and then all of a sudden you've got 4 million views and 50 subscribers, which is totally out of your control. And you don't want to say you don't want to like discredit anyone's work or say they got lucky, but there is so much luck involved in it.
Yeah.
And when a software is sort of dictating who gets to be seen and who doesn't, it makes it really, really hard and sometimes hard to swallow a little bit sometimes. Yeah.
For sure. I mean, listening to you, I think we really connect with that with Evolving Love Project. You know, so much goes into this, you know, the podcasting, the photos, everything, all of the editing that Liam does, all of the time, the organizing, the administration, like, you know, all of the back and forths, you know, to have you on today and the different guests that we have. There's so much involved. And I think, you know, in a world where we do just have so much, you know, we have so much for free at our fingertips, you know, to be able to support people who are doing things is just like so important. You know,
and also allows the creatives to then be as creative as they want.
Exactly. You don't want to be. It's like one of those things. I mean, the struggling artist always makes the best work, but sometimes it'd be nice not to struggle.
You don't want to struggle too
much. I don't want to be like one of those artists who, when they die, they make all their money. I don't think that applies to my level of work, but who knows?
I mean, one of my favorite kind of people who kind of marry that sense of like incredible aesthetic and kink is Dominatrix Iris. But it's like if you like, she's charging a lot of money, first of all.
Yeah.
But also like the shoots that she does,
they're beautiful.
Are just like they're all in French chateaus and like this like all on film and the guy travels with her.
Yeah, exactly. How big is her team of people?
That's what I mean. Because I feel like she's constantly pumping out really, really high and beautiful work every day. And if I like get something like half as good as that once a month, I feel like I'm like dominating.
Yeah.
But it's like every day you're like, oh, far out. Like that's so good. And like yesterday was like, oh, far out. It's so good. It's like constantly pumping out, like all power to them.
Yeah.
And like great. And it creates their work is fantastic, but it's just like, I would just like a piece of that pie so I could be as creative as that is and create those things as well. So
Are you worried at all about AI?
Yes and no, but some of us are people are sort of capitalizing on themselves, so using the AI to almost create like online versions of it, so people can pay to talk to the AI version of themselves or subscribe to the AI version. So they're taking ownership of the AI effectively.
Wow.
Like
in a chat room type
I think so they can talk to the AI version of themselves, I guess, which is weird because it must just like record how they've spoke to people in the past. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how
I'd be worried about what they were talking about because I'd be like, I haven't
But you have
approved
to understand
this.
That it's like the same way you got to understand it's AI. I remember I got AI to write like a bio for me or something the other day and it was like so weird how well it was written. Like it sounded like it was something I would say and I was like, this is kind of creepy. Like this is like the language and like stuff that I would use when I would write an email to someone. I was just like playing around with it. I'm like, that sounds like it was me. So AI is a weird thing, but
we're friends with the cam girl and she was telling me that all of the sessions that she does for her company, they own those sessions and they have the option in the future to make AI versions of them, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's crazy to think, especially with like Midjourney and all these tools for kind of digital manipulation, someone could eventually go, I want to do a latex like Karen Kruger in the style of so-and-so photographer. Like it's kind of wild to think.
Yeah, it is.
Don't
it
give
is.
Our listeners any weird ideas, Liam.
you know, you sort of hope as more and more things become more, I guess, not fake, but artificial, that people sort of crave that real,
yes,
that realness. Yeah, you sort of hope that that's what comes from this, that while you have the fake version of the fingertips, to really have that human connection and have that real aspect of what's being created, it to be almost at a premium. So it makes our product even more valuable, because that's the real genuine person that's created that, and it's come from someone's mind, not a algorithm or piece of software. I mean, fingers crossed, you hope that's what happens, but who knows.
I feel like you can really feel when it is AI, you know, even from a writer's perspective as well. I feel like there's more sort of non-monogamous you know, content creators coming out, and it's like their photo, and then the writing, you know, it's educating about something, but you can just feel that it's written by AI. And I just can't I'm just like, I just can't connect in with that.
Yeah.
It'll become, I mean, the worry is that it feels transparent at the moment to see through it, but then...
Well, the better the software gets, the harder that will be. That's what I mean. It's constantly like, it's constantly learning.
But then it's never going to learn to like replicate the feeling of like rubber on your skin.
Exactly. That tangible feeling will not be replicated.
Yeah.
Because like you do see like, even like I remember a couple of years ago, this AI first that came out and stuff then was a quite like clunky. And then you look at it now, it's like, wow, it has developed a long way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess you got to, as things become more artificial, I think hopefully people will sort of really want to get to that tangible feeling still, and that level of realness that you can't really replicate it, I guess.
And then potentially creators, like you were saying, like if you don't want to do admin stuff, you can just farm that out. You can just go, all I care about is the creative side of things.
And that's one of the hardest things about this biz. Like you want to be creative, but there's so much admin and, you know, hours and hours of, you know, scheduling posts and, you know, all that sort of stuff that really, as someone who's probably a little bit ADHD and can't focus on those sort of things at times, it's one really hard thing that I struggle with. But yeah, if I could just get AI Kruger to sort that out for me, that'd be sweet.
Yeah. And so we do have listeners all around the world with this podcast, and you mentioned, so there's the Canadian photographers, but on this world tour that you are eventually going to embark on, what are the cities that you would hit?
Yeah. Like obviously want to do Europe. So, I mean, the UK, I've got like London, I've got a great friend that lives in Liverpool. You know, Berlin has always been really high on my list. I've got like my German heritage from my mother's side, which has always sort of really wanted to go back and check that out. But also just for like the scene there looks pretty fucking cool. There's so many places like Amsterdam, like Poland, like there's really so much. And like I've had so many people reach out to me over like the last few years, like wanting to collab and stuff, and it would actually be like a logistical nightmare to try and sit down and organize all those things.
You
and
need
like
a tour manager.
I do. I literally would. And I am terrible at that sort of stuff as well. Yeah. I'm like, I'm notoriously late. I've missed like probably 40% of my flights to Sydney in the last 3 months. So let alone getting around Europe scares the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those things. I probably do need a tour manager. Yeah. But that's not really in the budget right now. So
yeah. Is there ever interest from, like, obviously you're doing a lot of work within the kink, like modeling scene. Is there ever interest from like the commercial photography, like more kind of mainstream, like say being on the cover of Vogue or, you know, whatever that might
be? I've done some like, I guess, mainstream one. Like there's a company that makes extra long t-shirts that I work with sometimes called Plus Two Clothing. They're really great, but I do some modeling and stuff for them just because I'm a tall guy, I guess. I mean, it is like I do sort of cross over a few times. Like I've done some stuff with like nightclubs and stuff before, like hosting and things like that. I have like there's this person from the Daily Mail that follows me, and I'm always a bit skeptic of them. Like,
oh no,
what are you looking at? Leave me alone. But I mean, not necessarily at this stage, but
Like, there was a moment.
The photo of you in the rubber with the frills, with the one you
puffy,
the puffy,
the puffy pirate.
I mean, that feels like it should be on the cover of Vogue. I feel like you
very,
are
very, very kind of you. That was shot by Pleasing Pain, by the way. So that's a little plug
out. Shout out, Pleasing Pain.
That is some really cool work.
But also your look, you know, it's the outfit, but it's also you. Mm. And it's like, I feel like there's like, you could go as far as you possibly could as a kink model.
I mean, I'm trying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just all about exposure, I guess, and opportunities. And like I said, like there probably is more opportunities for that in Europe and the States or in North America. But it's just sort of getting there is the thing. It can be very isolating being Australian. It's a long way from everywhere.
Yeah. Because there was that, I was just going to say that there was that there was that moment, that kind of cultural zeitgeist moment around the like Rihanna, like Zana Bane, like that kind of kink where it felt like kink just went suddenly mainstream. Like everyone was just wearing harnesses and it was like that whole thing. Have we moved now away from that?
No, it's still I see it quite a lot now in like pop, like music videos and stuff. Latex is still quite a popular, I guess, fabric. And it's interesting seeing some like designers and stuff getting now like Megan Thee Stallion and stuff wearing some stuff from people. Like designers like, I know, and like, oh, good for you, that's really fucking cool. So it is still around, and it's funny, like that's what I mean, like then because when popular culture sees that, and a lot of people, that's the first time they see that, and then they stumble across me and they're like, they think that I'm copying them. I'm like, I'll see you first. created it first. Like that's one of those, I guess it's like one of those things, like I guess where I sort of joke about it, someone like, it does annoy me sometimes, and it's like imitation is always like the finest form of flattery, but sometimes it'd just be nice to get some credit for being, and like everyone's inspired by everything, so I'm sure someone's done it before me or done something similar towards me. It's like whether it's direct inspiration or subconsciously or consciously. But I don't think that's like with every small creator that, you know, big designer labels might steal your design or whatever it is, you know, steal your beat or whatever it ends up being. So it's not unique to me, and it's unique to everyone trying to be creative on a smaller scale. So you don't actually be credited for your work sometimes, but sometimes that just doesn't happen. Like sometimes I've found myself on like posters and stuff in Europe.
What?
Whoa. Yeah. And I'm like, no one's asked me or...
Whoa.
Yeah, and I'm just messaging like, oh,
that
look.
That feels very unethical.
Yeah, and I'd be like, oh, look, I probably would have said yes, but heads up would be nice. And then they'll try and be like, oh, we just found it on Google. So I'm like, even so, if you did find it on Google, that image still belongs to someone. That's a person's face. Yeah, like they're for like a club night, like Berlin themed party or something. And I'm like, there's a picture of me
on
there.
You're the poster for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're like, fly me over.
Yeah, literally. So things like that. I've even found myself on like a designer's website. So I'd bought something from them, you know, paid full price for it and stuff, and it got sent over, and I posted on Instagram, tagged them. And then my friends on that website like a few months later goes, do you know that they're using your picture to like sell this product?
That's awful.
No.
And then when I sort of like emailed about it, and they were like, what do you mean? What are you upset about? Like you should be like, it was like a privilege that they were using my image.
Oh no.
And again, I probably would have said yes if they just would have asked, but it was just like the assumption that because I'm wearing one of your products that my image belongs to you is pretty weird, I think. But yeah. There's things
that
like
that
happen.
Not feel good.
It's weird. You're just like, oh, I'm like, that's me. And you're trying to monetize me and I'm getting nothing from this.
Yeah, I feel like the etiquette in that situation is, hey, we would really love to post this photo of you. Can we please send
most
you a
of the
bunch
time,
more outfits?
And then like, you can... Yeah, I would say yes, even just if you just ask. But yeah, just like almost like stealing my images to monetize them is really weird sometimes. Yeah.
Kyren, this has been an absolutely fascinating conversation and I feel like we could talk even more about this.
Absolutely.
I'm going to be thinking about this for a long time. I think we're definitely going to have you on the podcast again at some point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've had a great time. I've been looking forward to this for a little while because like, I think you guys have reached out previously and even just had like chats online about just stuff, and I just sort of really like what you guys are doing and give me some good energy and had a really fun day. I've, like I said, I've been looking forward to doing something with you guys. And I think initially we wanted to do it like online. I was like, no, I really want to be in the same room.
Yeah,
and
it's have not that. The same.
Yeah. So I'm glad we've finally made it come to fruition. And yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
And maybe next time we'll do it all. You'll have your latex.
Yeah.
All
right.
Yeah, we'll yeah my birthday
dressed,
rubber.
Yeah. We'll all be dressed in. I'll bring something along for you. I'm sure I've got something to fit.
Okay, perfect.
And we're
perfect.
All to sit here in our cat suits while you guys sweat profusely and I just hang out.
Oh my yeah, gosh.
You'll be so
I'll be chilling. You'll be like,
oh my gosh.
But if people want to find where you are online.
Yep. So my main sort of thing is Instagram, and it's King_Kruger, K-R-U-G-E-R _. There's links there, whatever you want to do, follow, support me in any way you can. I'd really appreciate it. Like I said, that's me. And yeah, really appreciate you guys having me on today. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Evolving Love Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to hit the subscribe button and leave a comment on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback and support fuels our passion, and together we're building a community of curiosity, kindness, and growth.
If you would like to show your support and are interested in accessing 2 extra podcast episodes each month, along with access to my exclusive writing, you can become a premium subscriber over at evolvingloveproject.substack.com. Subscribe, comment, and let's keep the conversation going.